Welcome to Not Work, Myth, and Storytelling. This is the show where ancestral wisdom meets the modern imagination. I'm your host and lead storyteller, Marisa Gowdy. I'm a myth worker, a story healer, and a writing coach. I'm the author of The Sovereignty Knot, A Woman's Way to Freedom, Power, Love, and Magic, and the founder of the Writer's Knot and Author's Knot communities. On Knot Work, we explore the mythology and folklore of Ireland and beyond. Whether you're drawn to Celtic culture and the power of the landscape, or whether you just like a good story and expansive conversation, you're in the right place. Fáilte. If you love what you hear and want to support the show, I'd be so grateful if you'd become a paid subscriber to my Myth is Medicine newsletter over on Substack. Look for the link at the top of the show notes or visit mythismedicine.substack.com. Season 6, Episode 35, Meet the Elemental Grannies with Elizabeth Cunningham. We'll begin this episode with a taste of Elizabeth Cunningham's latest novel, Over the Edge of the World. Described as lyrical, often funny, always imaginative, Over the Edge of the World ponders mortality and immortality, human bravery and folly, justice and injustice, ecological disaster and redemption. Set in another world, in a timeless time, the story speaks to our own world and time as only a fairy tale can. If you're a longtime Knot Work listener, you've met Elizabeth before. Widely known for the Maeve Chronicles, the stories of the Celtic Mary Magdalene, Elizabeth Cunningham is the author of 6 other novels, 4 collections of poems, and a memoir. She lives in the Valley of the Mahinkantuck, on land that was home to the Esopus tribes of the Lenape. She's also been my longtime mentor. In addition to hearing a little bit of Over the Edge of the World, you'll also hear something from her latest poetry collection, Holding Our Brokenness. You can find all of Elizabeth's books at elizabethcunninghamwrites.com. Before we immerse ourselves in today's episode, I wanted to let you know that the doors are now open for the 2026 edition of The Author's Knot. This is our intimate 10-month online writing program for thought leaders, memoirists, novelists, and heart-led visionaries, all working on a book or another big project. I say it that way because so often our ideas do want to take the form of that tried and true technology of the book. But sometimes you're like me, and the big project becomes something like a podcast. Our members are not only working on novels and memoirs, they're also developing long-term projects like Substack newsletters and performance pieces. The Author's Knot will help you strengthen your voice, clarify your message, deepen your craft, and truly commit to your creative work so you can bring the fullness of your vision to life. This will be the 2nd year that I'm offering this program, and I'm grateful to say that 2025's program was a deep and nourishing success. Here's what one member says about her experience. Over the past year, I've had the honor and gift of being held within the Dríocht, that's the magic, of the Author's Knot. As both a masterful story weaver and a graceful space holder, Marisa creates an atmosphere that welcomes all stories and all aspects of the creative process with authenticity, integrity, and generosity. Those who gather within the Author's Knot become a community of artists aligned in shared values and creative purpose. Oh, I'm deeply grateful to receive those words and to share them with you. And I'd love to know if you'd like to join us. Many of our past members are signing up to join us for a 2nd year, so space is definitely limited in the 2026 Author's Knot. It's a radical act to commit yourself to your words and your art. It takes devotion, and it takes real, focused support. And that's what I can offer you in this program. I hope you'll consider joining us. Find all the details about the Author's Knot, as well as the application, at marisagowdy.com. Well, I am so excited to welcome Elizabeth back to the podcast for the 3rd time. And Elizabeth has 2 new books out. You'll be hearing a little bit from both of them. As is the way on the podcast, we'll ask the story to speak for itself, and then we'll explore all the ways that it resonates through our lives today. So, Elizabeth, will you read to us a little bit from your new novel, Over the Edge of the World?
I will, and I'm very glad to be here. And I won't say too much by way of introduction, because we'll be having a conversation, except this book is very complex. People have said that it unfolds like a rose. And there is a character named Rose in this book, who you will have to get the book to know about her. But I think one of the motivating forces for me in writing it was wanting to write about the elements in a fairy tale sort of way. So you're going to meet the grannies. Granny Sweep had a broom. She lived so close to the sky, she swept the clouds that had gotten stuck on the pinnacle. They all live in different places. Granny Sweep lives on a pinnacle that's very high and has sheer walls. Granny Sweep had tricky eyes. Sometimes it was hard for her to see out of her right eye, but with her left eye, her wind eye, she could see all the way to the edge of the world. She could see small things too, bees in the heart of roses, tears catching light. And though she could see over the highest walls into the ramshackle hovels and piecemeal gardens of outside world, she could not see inside the vast dome at the center of the walled enclosure. She could not get past its huge, smooth glare. It troubled her. She sometimes wondered if that dome hid her own secrets from her, who she was, how she had gotten to her high pinnacle, or what she was to do about anything. Next comes Granny Spark. The forest where Granny Spark lived was a magic forest. It was the last forest left in that world. Whenever people who wanted to cut down the trees came too close, Granny Spark would sing this song to the trees. Up, trees, make your roots strong legs and swift feet. Up and away to find new earth, dark and sweet. Away, away, over the dry and thirsty ground, to a place near or far where we cannot be found. And the trees would hear her, and their great roots would stir, and the whole forest would move like a cloud shadow over the earth or a wave over the sea, leaving not a trace, confounding anyone who tried to follow. Such was the magic of the forest. Such was the magic of Granny Spark. Next comes Granny Dirt. Granny Dirt lived in a shoe. It was not a dainty dance slipper. It was the kind of shoe a farmer would wear, with a thick sole to keep out the damp of the dew, a shoe that could walk through a muddy field and keep a foot dry, the kind of shoe that went right up over the ankle to the shin, a shoe that could be laced up tight or loosened. Granny Dirt was very clever. She not only had laces up the shoe, but also a thatched roof at the top. And when it looked like rain was coming, her many children would climb up the shoe, grab hold of a lace, and jump down, and the boot would close up tight. It was a very big shoe. They say it was once a 7-league boot worn by a giant, when giants still walked the earth. No one knew where the other shoe was. And when people hunters came, Granny Dirt brought all the children inside. And then the shoe shrank, and no one saw anything but an old shoe in the mud. So Rose begins, the Rose who you will meet is an old woman at the beginning of this story, and she's going to tell her whole life story. But first, she's telling everyone about the grannies. So in this next piece, it's more apparent that Rose is speaking. And this is Granny Brine. We've come to the shore and made a fire of driftwood. The wind is damp. Now and then a cloud covers the moon. A few drops of rain spatter our faces, hiss on the burning wood. Granny Brine was old, I begin. How old? The children chant. As old as the sea, maybe older. After a time, the rain starts to fall. The children's parents gather them up and carry them away to dry beds. I pull my cloak over my head and listen to the fire sputter. And I remember the edge of the world miles high, disappearing into cloud at the top and into fog below, mist that shrouded a gleaming temple of bone. Granny Brine's secrets, my secrets.
Oh, Elizabeth, thank you for introducing us to the grannies. Thank you for invoking the grannies and the elements that they, not just that they represent, but the elements that they are.
They are the elements. That is the heart of the story. They're the elements embodied.
Yeah. And, you know, I know there's a beautiful, wonderfully complex plot that we're not going to explore here today. We're going to try to keep this conversation in this elemental invitation, which I just feel like is so much the work of myth and fairy tale in general. And from what I know of your work, as much as you've written masterful plots between Maeve's stories and your wonderful other novels, there's an elemental relationship that you have with life and beauty that has always inspired me so much. And it really comes through in this book, especially.
Yeah, I think fairy tale, even whether I'm writing a fairy tale or historical fantasy or a semi-autobiographical murder mystery, not that there were any murders in my childhood, I think fairy tale has always been my inspiration because I read fairy tales as a child. I also read books by Nesbitt and C.S. Lewis. And I think at the core of those were those authors' love of fairy tales. So there are generations and generations of storytellers that have incorporated fairy tale into their work. So that was very much the intent. Also, ever since I found out that people invoke the elements in ceremony and that I could never get tired of pondering the elements. And that's very old too. That's old in stories. It's old in myths. It's also our reality. Our reality is earth, air, fire, and water. And the spirit that they draw forth from the planet, from us. And we tend to forget the elements. We take them for granted, or people can, and just, or they think, oh, the elements are there to be harnessed or suppressed or overcome. And so it was really important for me to see the elements as alive, as being able to take human form, but also elemental form. And that coming to terms with them, they're remembering themselves and us remembering them and coming into partnership and alignment with the elements was very, very important motivating factor in writing this fairy tale.
Yeah.
And fairy tales are full of old women.
Thank goodness.
They're full of old women and also brave young people. And those are who we need today.
Right. Right.
That bravery of a young person and the wild wisdom of the older people, the elemental people.
That seems to say something about how we tend to get lost in between our brave youth and our wise years, and that there's often what happens in the busy middle.
Yeah.
What does happen?
In the busy middle, we also read fairy tales and we read them to our children. And I remember in The Wild Mother, I remember Eva, who's a woman in the middle and who has lost her child and is bereft, thinking of the heroism of everyday life. And that is also the old woman in that book, The Wild Mother, Grammar, represented that kind of courage to her.
Wow. So have you noted, I guess there's that sense of knowing that I feel like the elements have always been so much part of your work, but then also these archetypal characters, which just sort of seem like they've recurred in such gorgeous ways over your decades of writing.
Yeah. And I think that certainly in the Maeve Chronicles, there were lots of magical old women sprinkled through Dinwin and Anna, the prophetess, and Ma, who is my name for the Virgin Mary. And at one point, Maeve's friend, Asus, says, no wonder you know everything. It's you and your old women, you cheat.
Oh.
And then Maeve, of course, grows up to be one of those wild old women. So what would we do without them?
Yeah.
And how yeah. they infuse our lives in the middle with the courage to go on.
And I think there's a lot of good lip service and sometimes just lip service paid to the power of elders. But I think that there's also something, there is truth in that for sure, and that you're really giving us that in these grannies, even though, as you say, they don't remember who they are. They don't actually remember their role in creation or in this
and
particular
destruction too.
And destruction.
Which we're seeing so much because we're out of balance now in this world. Mm-hmm. If the world is warming, it becomes more volatile.
Right.
And yeah. we have fires and floods and windstorms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And not all earthquakes are, I mean, earthquakes are not necessarily caused by human agency, except because of fracking.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. So we met, I mean, we don't, our relationship, many of us in our culture, we don't have a conscious relationship with the elements.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And when you slow down to recognize, oh my goodness, everything truly is made of them, it's a bit staggering, right? It's like, wait, I can't fit anything outside of it. And if something isn't exactly fire or isn't exactly water, it's a blending of the two. Like, it's been a part of yeah. my own creative process for years. And I know I've worked yeah. with it with my writers. Like, I once did an entire program where we wrote to the elements for months.
Yeah, I think you could do it for a lifetime.
Yeah, clearly.
And they are all... You can make mud pies with earth and water, and you make tea with fire and water, and we yeah. all need air all the time. I know sometimes it does stagger me. I mean, maybe I am judging people. When people say, oh, it's such a beautiful day and we've been having a drought, it bothers mm-hmm. me.
Yeah.
Or, oh, I hope it doesn't rain this weekend, but we're having a drought. So I
yeah.
think that too, oh, that reminds me of something that C.S. Lewis said in, I guess it was That Hideous Strength. He said, there is no such thing as bad weather. Mm. There's just weather.
Right.
And if the grown-ups, he was speaking to someone who was a little bit prissy, if you hadn't been kept inside when someone thought it was bad weather, you would have loved the weather. You would have loved being in the rain.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I think that embrace of the elements and that aligning with them, because we're made of it. I mean, yeah. our bodies are made of it.
Yeah, for yeah. sure. You know what that reminds me of? I was in my mid-20s and my husband and I weren't even married yet. We went to go see in Woodstock, where these things happen, these two yeah. Native American seers were like offering their prophecies. And they were also, you know, doing psychic readings on the side. And it was so very Woodstock in 2004. But what I remember so vividly is that the man said, you know, one of the problems is that people tend to take the weather personally. Mm. You do realize that this has nothing to do with you. And essentially, you should just go put on a raincoat or grab an umbrella or put on an extra sweater. And I remember being in my, like, the brash glory of my early 20s. And that just, oh, because I had been raised in a world in which, of course, you took the weather personally. It probably was raining just to spite you, or yeah. that it would really determine your perspective on the day. And I've carried that with me ever since in one of those funny, like, epiphany moments of like, oh, that was obvious, but thank you for saying it out loud.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So I want to visit with the aunties, with the grannies. There are aunties in the novel, but
there's
aunties
too.
And they are fabulous. And we're going to leave them within the covers of the book for the readers to discover.
There's humor in this book. I just want
yes.
to.
Yes. Yes, there is pain, there is humor, there is hope, there is all hope lost. But I wonder if we could just visit with each granny in turn and yeah. just see if she has anything else she wants to say and offer, because we begin with Granny Sweep on her pinnacle. And I want to just say too, you do such a beautiful job in the book of offering their a snippet of their story and almost just like their, you know, their baseball card in a way of like, yeah. this is them and their qualities. And we keep revisiting them again and again. And yet also I remember pausing like, wait a minute. Okay. Which one's which and where does she live? And it's one of those wonderful ways in which I want to understand it exactly. And I'm also swept up in the story and all the elements mm-hmm. blend. But in the spirit of that, before folks read the book, I wonder if we could just sit with each granny in turn and just
what
give her.
What would you like to ask Granny Sweep?
I am struck by Granny Sweep's vision and what she sees with that one wind eye.
Yes.
Yeah. So
that's how she travels. Because she cannot get up or down her pinnacle.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't really know how she got there. She thinks maybe her cows and her chickens floated there during some flood. But Granny Sweep, I didn't write about her hair. I do write about all of their hair. Uh-huh. Granny Sweep has very, very long hair, and she braids it sometimes because her idea is that someday someone may need to climb up that pinnacle and her braid will be a rope. So it's not that she feels she doesn't mind being on her pinnacle, but she's aware that there are things that she doesn't know and there are things that may be coming that she needs to prepare for.
Yeah.
So she is preparing her hair.
And I love that her braids are not for her to be rescued, but that someone may need to come to her for help with this, which is a beautiful twist on the old tale.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And there I do have on my map of make-believe, which is right in my writing room, a pinnacle where Grandfather Know-All lived. That was the inspiration for her, how I saw where she lived.
Well, I remember you mentioning this poster to me years ago when this story was kind of just a glint in your eye and a poster upstairs. And I love that we're in this moment of it's real in its new way.
And I think probably and of course we all know about the old woman. Well, let's stay with, go on to which granny you want to go to next.
Well, I think I'll take them in order because I'll trust the storyteller that she first gave us air and now she's giving us fire in Granny Spark. And that mystery of the forest that moves, right? That sense of the paradox held within being rooted and being in community, and also at the blink of an eye, the flip of a switch, the flick of a wand, the forest could move.
Yeah. And you know, actually, it just comes to me now that forests are moving. With climate change, there are trees. They may not move literally in the way I invoke it in the book, but they are moving.
Yeah.
And I was saying to someone only yesterday that what are your values? Well, I would like trust to be a value, but I'm not very trusting. I want to be more trusting of life. And I said, the times when I'm most trusting is I watch what the plants are doing. And I was trying to think, well, obviously Granny Spark represents fire. Well, then why do I have her in a forest? Because that's where we store the sun.
And
photosynthesis,
right?
And when we burn, you know, we have our little bonfires, and that's the sun. So that's why Granny Spark is living in the forest.
Oh, I love that, because that way of making, and the sun is our distant friend, but that sense of how do we become intimate with it. It's in the plants. I had missed that love of nuance before. So I'm so glad we're going through each one of these.
Yeah. Oh. That's how she lives where she lives. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Granny Dirt in her shoe and the sanctuary keeper. And I know that I'm sure everyone will instantly come to a certain image they have from their own childhood about that old woman in the shoe.
Old woman who lived in the shoe and has all the children with her, which Granny Dirt does.
Yeah.
And I spent a long time thinking of their names because I didn't want to just call them Granny Air, Granny Fire, Granny, you know, Earth, Granny Water. So they had to have these more mysterious names. And I thought about Granny Dirt. Well, can I really use the word dirt? And I said, yes, I can, because I think it's especially important that she's called dirt and not earth or something more romantic. Because we say dirt, dirty, soil, soiled. And we forget, hey, you know what you like to eat? That's where the food comes from. Yeah, so I really, really wanted her to be Granny Dirt and live in a shoe, which is, of course, walking on the earth. And she has, they all have magical hair. Yeah, Granny Spark obviously has sparks flying from her head.
Oh, good.
And Granny Dirt sometimes has all these vegetables, you know, beets and rutabagas and things that she'll shake her head and it'll all tumble out. So she is really the abundance of the earth. and the security of the earth and how it holds you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And honors the anarchy of the dirty children and the places where, you know, I mean, I don't know, the happiest moments of childhood are often the dirtiest ones. I have photographs on my wall, huge ones of when my now 16-year-old was five at summer camp, covered in dirt. And they like, they had a photographer who came in and photographed our dirty children. And it's the most beautiful picture I'll probably ever have of my kids.
That's right. It does go with children. When Rose tells the story, the children go, "Granny, dirt is dirty." And it's like, yeah, she's dirt. She's dirt.
Right, right.
And we should not. And when we say, yeah, I mean, really think about it. We have this phrase, he treated me like dirt, or she treated me like dirt. Mm. Well, if only we would treat our dirt like the wonderful, powerful, life-giving force it is.
Yeah. When instead we're we're looking to those ivory towers and we're putting, you know, granted we have Granny Sweep up in her spire, and there's nothing wrong with that because we're balancing things out. But we live in a world where it's all about who is held safe and pure in the tower is so often the ones who are celebrated and seen as quote unquote better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which again is a hint to the plot of the story, but we're going to come back from the big sweeping plot and land here with Granny Brine, who's really the most mysterious of the ladies, I feel like.
Yeah. Well, Granny, I thought, what am I going to call her? I'm not going to call her Granny Ocean or Granny Sea. So I called her Granny Brine because brine is salt water.
Yeah.
And so are our tears. And she is very mysterious. And she does have a temple of bone, which if you read the book, you'll find out how those bones got there. And she builds them into a temple, and they rattle, and they shes bells, and they ring. Yeah, and she lives on that sea, and she knows things that nobody else knows.
Yeah. Her magic somehow strikes me as kind of the most dangerous, perhaps in the ways in which the ocean to us is beautiful, mysterious, and also the most likely to swallow us whole.
Yeah. And she knows, I mean, she is, her boat is right next to that shore where she's built the Temple of Bone, but she's gone other places. So she knows things about the world that nobody else knows, because they think, oh, you come to the edge.
Yeah.
That's it.
Right, right.
Yeah. She knows things.
Many of our listeners would be Maeve Chronicles readers. And I certainly was remembering Maeve's years as a weather witch on that boat. I was definitely feeling as if there was a lot in common between Lady Brine and Maeve in that stage of our life.
Yeah, she was and to be a weather, and her mothers were weather witches. And to be a weather witch, you do have to understand how all the elements go together.
Yeah.
Heat, cold, tides.
Yeah. That sort of ultimate act of conjuring. And I don't know, there's a whole other, maybe I'm not sure if it's quite an ethical question, but it is an interesting one when we imagine or encounter characters who have that ability to control the elements, which is a bit different than what we're talking about. These characters of yours here are the elements. And then what it's like to also be with characters who can work with the elements. And maybe they're just all on a big spectrum together. And they're all certainly related.
And I think when the weather magic, God forbid if it really is true that the government is messing with it. I don't think it is. But my understanding of weather magic is that you almost have to become the elements. I don't know that I ever did weather magic, but I had an experience once where there was a terrible drought and everything had dried up. And I was walking around and it was like I could feel the earth. I could feel that thirst. And I just started singing songs that were rain songs. And then it rained and the waters came back, and I don't know that I had anything to do with it at all. I probably didn't, but what I remember is feeling the thirst of the earth. And longing, feeling the longing for water of the earth. So I think that when you really do weather magic, it can't just be, I want, I want the weather to be good on Saturday because I'm going to blah, blah, blah.
Yes. It's not just for garden parties.
I think to do real weather magic, you do have to become the element.
Yeah.
And I don't claim to know how to do that. That's my sense of it, though.
Right. But I think that when we know we live in an interconnected co-creative universe, at some level, of course you had something to do with the rain.
Yeah.
It becomes maybe a slippery slope into believing that, you know, we are all high magicians who have certain special secret powers. But I think there's that sense of course it's true. In the same way that, of course, it's true that the government is controlling the weather, but that's because they're subsidizing the fossil fuel industry.
Well, that's true. That's true.
They're, right?
Yes. They're destroying. Yes. And it's interesting because control leads to destruction ultimately. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. Rather than relationship.
Yeah.
Control factor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And that so much of this book truly is about that dance of how relationships can ultimately save the world. You know, if you've got a book that's talking about going over the edge of it, there's also that element of saving and being saved. And it's all through the deeply human love that's woven through, as well as coming from those magical elemental grannies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at the start of our conversation, I mentioned that you have two brand new books, and I would love to also introduce this second one, which is a book of poetry.
Yeah. It's called Holding Our Brokenness, A Gathering of Poems. And then I think it has a further subtitle inside, which is 25 years.
Mm.
So I've thought about for a long time about, because most of my books, except for Tell Me the Story Again, which really is a story, and that's still in print, most of them have come and gone with the publishers that published them or whatever. So I have some from those earlier collections and then some starting in 2015, gathering them through the years.
Yeah.
And this was actually a pretty early one from the first book that I published, Small Bird, but it's in this book, Holding Our Brokenness, A Gathering of Poems, and it's seasonal, and it's called November Trees. In November, when I see them, gathered gray, brown remnants of leaf curling and wisping at their tips, pooled in laps of roots, the trees look like their own ghosts, like lingering smoke, like incense, thick and sinuous. With the green veil stripped away, I see the whole trunk sways as if the trees are davening. These trees who teach what temple columns are.
Oh, thank you for that. And I am so struck by that. Again, one of those obvious but perfect epiphanies of, if you wrote that to trees from 25 years ago, the story is still very much the same. The feelings are very much the same.
Yes, I just, they are.
But thank God still, you know, because we're talking about these changes in climate and things. But I was just driving yesterday, and I don't know what kind of trees they were, but there's that sense of, especially in November, we can see a tree completely anew because she's showing us down to her very bones. And I was just so struck by seeing these sculptures of great gray hands reaching into the sky. And I'm like, okay, Marisa, stay on the road. Like, you must, like, this is a very holy moment of encountering the divine within the wooded world. But I just feel like I will hold tight to this poem because it'll remind me of that exact image. Mm-hmm. And which was one of those like moments, you know, in the midst of life. And I think we've talked previously about fairy tale belonging to young children, and then often and then including the elders and the wise old women, and that we tend to get lost in between those two stages sometimes. And those people, perhaps the me's in their 40s in the world, get lost in fairy tale. But maybe it's those moments when we can just see a tree or hear a story that we're recovered for a little while.
And those are rare moments, probably at any time.
Yeah,
the elders too have I think the older, I had a fairy godmother who said that people become more themselves for better and worse when they're older. So there are wise and foolish elders, and we're both. But I also thinking of, speaking of grannies, where I live, and in November you can see it, there's a lot of trees I call granny trees. And there are four of them on a certain walk that I take, really old, ancient, gnarled maples who get their baby leaves every year and are still alive. You can't believe it, but they're still alive. But yes, you see them, and they reveal themselves almost in the same way that I've got elemental grannies who are elements, but they're grannies. Well, the trees are trees, and they're also people that we can see.
Yes.
They are people. Yeah. They're arboreal beings.
Yes. And that expansive definition of the word people is such an invitation, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Well, Elizabeth, thank you for peopling the world with such fabulous elemental fairy tale, imaginary, deeply real beings. The world is so much better for the work that you do, from the poetry to the novel to last time we had you on, you were sharing your memoir. Like, I'm just so grateful to be able to sit with you
right
in the richness of all you do.
You, who really sees into the heart of story and tells the most wonderful stories.
Thank you.
Ancient and new.
Ah, 'tis a good bit of work to do in this lifetime. I'm grateful we get to share it. So as we say farewell, we will do our due diligence and let folks know where to find your books and where to find you, because this is being released the last week of November, which in a certain large country in North America is seen as a time to not only have turkey and have complicated, hopefully, conversations about colonization and the ways in which Thanksgiving was founded, and also to go shopping. And perhaps we could save people a trip to their nearest big box store, and we could invite them to perhaps give the gift of some of your books this season.
That would be lovely. And you can find all of them at ElizabethCunninghamWrite.com. And I have order links on all the books that I've written that are in print. And the links will take you to bookshop.org, which is aligned with independent bookstores.
Yes.
So basically, you probably won't see them on shelves because I'm a wee grassroots sort of, so to speak, author, but they will be available electronically. And that's the electronic place that you can shop without feeling like, oh no, I went to Amazon again.
Yes.
bookshop.org that you can get them. And that is the link that you'll find at ElizabethCunninghamWrites.com. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for being with us and sharing the gifts of the grannies and the gifts of the elder trees and everything in between.
Yes. And thank you for everyone you invite. And thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. See you soon. Thank you for tuning in to Not Work Myth and Storytelling. Please subscribe and review the show on your favorite podcast platform, and do share this episode with other lovers of mythology and story. By the way, everyone is a lover of mythology and story, even if they've forgotten. Creating this show is a labor of love, and your support will help me continue to craft and share stories throughout this season and beyond. Please consider becoming a paid subscriber to my newsletter, Myth is Medicine, over on Substack, where you'll find new writing and conversations each week. You can find out more about my writing, my book, our online writing communities, as well as how to work with me as a writing coach at marisagowdy.com. Gratefully, I live, write, work, and record this podcast on the ancestral lands of the Munsee Lenape tribe, whose name means original people. Music on this show is performed by Beth Sweeney and Billy Hardy.